Boarding.
Well, joining us for his regular talk, it's Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Morning, Darren.
How are you?
Sore throat.
Sore throat.
Do the best we can.
Plenty as ever, KB, to get through. Let's start with Leeds United. Last home game this weekend against Charlton. Steve Evans, possibly the last time Leeds fans will see him at Elland Road. Nothing confirmed about next season. Wonder if we get your thoughts on whether or not you think Steve Evans should be kept on for next season.
Well, the real problem, of course, is we don't know what Massimo's thinking. What his long-term plans are, indeed his short-term plans are. But Evans hasn't come over as much of a personality. But having said that, he's got a decent record in winning games, which is what it's all about. I don't know what his thoughts are. There are suggestions he's available for other jobs. And there's a suggestion that other clubs are interested in him, but we don't know. And we also don't know what his thoughts are on changing the team or improving it. I gather it's not in his remit, so he has to get on with the players he's given. Is that true or not? I don't know. Some player managers wouldn't accept that situation. Other managers, as it suggested, for example, at Everton or Liverpool, do. So there's lots and lots of things have to be taken into consideration when you decide about a manager. A lot of it, of course, depends on the chairman. We don't know if that's his team, or it's Massimo's team, or there's some form of committee that decide which players we should have and which players we shouldn't. But judging on results, one would think that he's probably entitled to an extended run. But that again, as with so many things in Leeds these days, is unknown and not available for discussion.
Well, there's a lot of bits and pieces coming out of Leeds at the moment. There's some positive news coming out about ticket prices, and there's a new season ticket deal that they've put together where, this is last Tuesday, KB, they promised fans who buy tickets before May 31st, season tickets, a refund of at least 25% if Leeds United fail to reach the Championship playoffs next season, which I think a lot of fans are quite keen on the idea, and I suppose quite a lot of football clubs have to do these sort of things to try and increase the amount of season tickets.
Yes, just hang on a minute. Well, it's certainly innovative. I've never heard of it being done like anywhere before, which is not a reason for not doing it at all. I find it interesting. What you have to wonder is what happens with 25% of the season ticket money when it comes in. Does it go into a separate account until we do or do not reach the playoffs, 16-17? When it's returned, it just goes into the pot and then hope the money's available at the end of next season to return it to the fans if they don't succeed. Or is it going to be cash return, or is it going to be a 25% discount of the 17-18? Season tickets. That's at least ensuring there's a renewal. We don't know. But anything new is worth a try. And I've never heard of it before anywhere. So 10 out of 10 to Massimo for innovation. For the people who are chanting Massimo go, we've got to be careful that if he does go and we don't win playoff next season, he goes and takes his money with him. So that's a thought, isn't it? So perhaps he should be asking whether they're going to what will happen with the money in the meantime. And of course, isn't there another clause whereby if we sell more than 15 or 16,000 tickets, season tickets, there's a reduction anyway. If that goes through, well, 100 less 50 is 50. That's 25%, is it? 25% of the 50%, i.e. 12.5%, or is it 25% of the 100%? which case you mean you would get your season tickets for a quarter. And does that stand up financially? I don't know. Perhaps some open questions should be asked of the club to explain exactly what happens in whatever circumstance take place.
Now, there's been some big news this week, KB, in the world of football. And finally, justice for the 96 Hillsborough victims. The Hillsborough verdict came out this week, of course, with an unlawful killing of those 96 Liverpool fans. I just wondered your thoughts on what's happened over the course of this last 2 years, a very long process, but the correct decision in the end.
Well, I was... and a small, very, very small part of that inquiry, because I was interviewed by two detectives who were carrying out the inquiry in the Leeds department four years ago now, I suppose. So they were interviewed at the time, or during my career, I have been one-time chairman of the FA Cup committee, and one of whose remits was to decide where semi-finals should be played, before ultimately introduced the rule that they all played at Wembley. And the detective wanted an explanation of the rationale as to how any particular ground was chosen for the semi-final. I think he was looking for any question of impropriety influencing the decision. But in fact, it was fairly straightforward, the system which I inherited began for years. And that was that who are the semi-finalists? And as far as possible, pick a ground which is as near as possible halfway between the two competitors. Try and make it equally easy for both sets of fans to travel. So normally you had... London was a bit of a problem, but normally you chose Arsenal. Rarely they didn't choose Chelsea, because at the time it wasn't a very well developed ground. But if it was London area, you chose Arsenal. Aston Villa was always a favourite, because it was easier to get to, middle of the country. And Old Trafford was another one. Some other reason that rarely used Main Road. And then Sheffield Wednesday. It was a big ground, and it was handy for Lancashire clubs who were playing Southern clubs, i.e. in this occasion, Liverpool versus Notts Forest. So I suppose they could have chosen Manchester. Except there's a certain antipathy by Merseyside fans towards Manchester, obviously because of their rivalry. But the thing that everybody's overlooked in this, the police have taken the blame. Well, a great part of the blame, this is, I suppose, inevitable, as they were managing it on the day. What has been overlooked is that, so one question was put to me was that, why didn't the FA inspect the grounds? Well, as everybody knows, before you can play a league game, you have to have a safety certificate, which is issued by the council. In a case, it was Sheffield Town Council. And I know from my experience that these are usually very searching investigations at the start of each season. The ground is inspected thoroughly, all questions of access and egress are examined and checked out to make sure that they work in accordance with a laid down principle. Toilet facilities, catering facilities, all looked at. And then that depends on that inspection and discussion. Depends on the council, what capacity they certify, and what conditions, if any, they apply. Well, I can remember at Chelsea years ago, we were having our annual pre-season discussion around the table. And I was indicating this. I remember at one particular time, I said, said that we were recruiting stewards between 18 and 60 years of age. And this pompous little person, no, that'd be 21 years of age minimum. So I looked at him, I said, I see, so 18-year-olds go far for their country, get killed and blown up. But they're too young to shoot a football match, right? So he sort of begrudging, said, oh, okay. But obviously he's being a bit pompous and silly. But it does illustrate, normally, the length and depth of the review that takes place pre-season. And one would have thought that that infamous tunnel would have been considered by the council, as well as the police, as part of the pre-season review before issuing a safe certificate. There's obviously FA. Would naturally rely upon the local councils rather than just a day's inspection by some FA officials. So I think I'm a bit surprised that I haven't read anything about the council's safety officers being interviewed as part of the process. There is no doubt that it was mismanaged. It does raise a question as to why an officer with little or no operational experience was given that job in the first place. One wonders why he was given it towards the end of the season. So the first game he was in charge of was such a high profile match as an FA Cup semi-final. You'd have thought if he was going to be promoted, then he would have been promoted for the following season. Unless there's some internal problem within the police, which we don't know about. But at the end of the day, one must remember that you're well advised to get to a game as early as possible, rather than leave it to the last minute. But it had, obviously, the disaster, the tragedy was terrible. That was the worst one. But don't forget, we had the Bradford City fire. We had the trouble at Bolton. And we had the Ibrox disaster. And I suppose the only good thing that came out of Hillsborough, if there is such a thing, is the Lord Taylor report enforced all theatre grounds, which I thoroughly approved of. I know there's been an argument with agitation the last few years about limited standing, but I don't know why. And when you go to the cinema or the theatre, you don't stand, do you? You sit down. Have comfort. So why should you stand in the rain for a football match? So I think that this long inquiry will make it impossible for any politician to propose change in the law and allow standing at football matches. We only seem to make progress on the back of disasters. And it's a terrible thing to be hanging on over Scousers' heads for so long, and the families. But it just emphasised that if you're running a football club, you must never take your eye off the ball or lower your guard for 1 minute, because you know what's going to happen around the corner. All we can do is extend our sympathies to the Liverpool fans. And of course, they were also the victims in the Heysel disaster as well. It must be a unique one club having two such terrible disasters, not too far apart. So all we can do is wish the surviving families the best for the rest of their lives. I hope this outcome of this inquiry has brought some comfort to them.
Well, moving on, KB, and this weekend, of course, bank holiday weekend over here in the UK, and the second Tour de Yorkshire is getting underway. Radio Yorkshire there over the weekend, and bringing you updates right the way throughout the weekend. So very, very exciting, and another great advert for this wonderful county.
It is, and of course, we must not forget that you and your team did a great job last year. Beating BBC Radio Leeds in your coverage and exclusive interviews. So good luck, and I hope you repeat your success this year.
Oh, you could say that. I couldn't possibly comment.
And yet, Yorkshire, I can say that you couldn't possibly comment. Wouldn't expect you to, even though you're chuckling under your breath there. But no, do it again. Do it again, I'm sure you will. And yes, that great county of Yorkshire. I keep reading about the recession, the delay, that this, that, the other. And every week or every month I read of another big development that's taking place in Leeds and more jobs being created. So that is tremendous. And all due congratulations and recognition must go to the forward-looking local politicians and the civil servants for encouraging such growth, and long may it continue.
Well, KB, as ever, pleasure to chat, and we'll catch up with you at the same time next week.
Thank you very much, and good luck.